Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And if you are a diehard fan of some of the biggest horror franchises, you know that fan films are becoming more and more popular these days. Well, we are here today with the writer and director of Roseblood, a Friday the 13th fan film, which serves as a direct sequel to my favorite Friday the 13th sequel, Part 7, The New Blood. Not only does this movie bring back original Part 7 stars Lar Park Lincoln, aka Tina, and Terry Kyle, aka Dr. Cruz, but it also features an appearance by Part 7 hottie Kevin Spiritus, who played Nick. We are so excited to welcome to the podcast today both the writer-director of Roseblood, Peter Anthony, and for his second appearance on our show, Kevin Spiritus.
Woo!
Look at that. We got some applause for it. So first off, thank you guys for being here today. We're really excited about this. Our first joint interview, Tim.
I know. This is a first. We usually just do one-on-one.
Yeah, we're more one-on-one guys.
I mean, today's practically an orgy.
You're not into
Well, this is a foursome. No, I'll tell you, this is what's, when you guys asked me to come back on, I said happily, but I think I need to share the time with Peter, because it's really his baby, and I'm so grateful that it worked out where I was able to be part of this reunion, so to speak. But and by the way, I'm talking with my hands a lot, so I know you all can't see this, but I gesticulate, and you know, that's how it is. Okay.
And he uses very big words like
gesticulate. Yes, I'm going to need a dictionary. Hang on.
So before we jump into Roseblood, we always ask this of people, and we're going to ask both of you, but starting with Peter, I'd love to hear about kind of like your background, like where are you from? How did you first become interested in horror and specifically Friday the 13th?
I'm from the New Haven, Connecticut area. And I've told this a bunch of times. Ever since I was like little, I was like 5 or 6. My parents had the TV downstairs. We didn't have them in our rooms. I'm older. I'm 45. So back then, all there was HBO for like a cable network thing. Showtime wasn't even out then, I don't think. So basically, like after I had to go to sleep at 10 or 11, but those shows didn't play till around that time. So I would like get up to like go pee and then like sneak downstairs and put on HBO and like Friday 13th. And I would make little masks and I would put them on and wear them and stuff. And it's very hard to explain to the younger generation today, because like I said before, it wasn't sexy to be into horror back then, because the generation before us, our parents, they weren't really into that or didn't understand it. So you almost were like an outcast kind of to think that way or to watch those movies. So I've been hooked ever since. I've been Jason on Friday the 13th on Halloween every single time, every year of my life.
Oh, I love God. That.
Well, first off, you're speaking to your generation, because yeah. I'm 42 and Tim is 44.
Yeah.
And I know Kevin is only 21, but we are right around the same age.
I'm not quite that young.
Okay, 22, 23. Okay. But
Kevin, I know we've spoken to you before about your audition for Part 7, but before that, growing up, were you a horror fan? Any movies that made an impact on you?
I wasn't a horror fan. I was more, let's take that back. I was a scary movie fan. Like the movies that I thrived on were, you know, all the Vincent Price House of Wax and House on Haunted Hill and those really great suspenseful and yeah, there were some maybe Jack the Ripper movies or something that were kind of fun for me, but don't hate me, folks. Jason was always, you know, kind of like, Jason was, I think, the first big franchise, wasn't it? I think before Halloween, maybe they were around the same time, but I do know that I found it kind of hokey that, I know, Tim just had a heart attack, but because I didn't, here's this murdering killer and he couldn't be killed, and it was like, really? But as I got more mature, I just sort of found the fun in it, you know, and then they got scarier to me. They got more, but the first Friday the 13th was really great. I have to say, you know,
I love them all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely, there's some that are a little more hokey than others, some that are darker than others, but
part seven has one of the best kills though, ever. I must say. And anyway, I'm going to also say, before I say that, there's some pretty great kills in Roseblood. Okay. But I think the sleeping bag.
Yes. It's my favorite kill of the whole series.
Of course.
It really is. It's just the best. But, you know, Peter, when we were looking you up in IMDb, saw that you have your own production company, Peter Anthony Productions, and you've also worked on some other Friday the 13th fan films, right? Can you tell us a little bit about them and where people, if we can watch them or how we can watch them?
Yeah. So the first big one was Friday the 13th Vengeance, which is kind of like the work that we use to land Laura, Kevin, and Terry on, you know, that we're real. So that was a movie that was, it took place 30 years after part six. We signed Steve Dash, who played Sack Jason in part two. And we signed CJ Graham, who played Jason in part six, and Tom McLaughlin, who was the director in part six. So that's the first. So I play a prisoner in that one. Just a bad a-hole guy with a shaved head figures. That's
oh, you can cuss on here. please. We encourage.
Oh, we can cuss. Okay. So, and that went really, really good. I did marketing for that. I did fundraising for that. And they just gave me more and more hats that I wore. And then Fall of Camp Blood, another Friday 13th, which is after part four. I play one of the main characters. James Dyer, which is the brother of the guy who dies in part four, the main character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We were lucky enough. We talked to Kimberly Beck from part four, who said that she actually would be up for reprising the role. We always ask people about that, like, because we love her character. I think,
Trish.
Yes. Trish and stuff. So part four, I think part four is your favorite sequel, right?
Part seven is.
Nice try.
Whatever part is being interviewed is Tim's favorite part.
I am on record, Peter, just so you know, that I am not a bullshitter. The first time we talked to Kevin Spiritus, I wasn't even a co-host. It was Tim just doing it. And I jumped in and said that part seven was my favorite sequel. Is part seven your favorite sequel? Or maybe it isn't, because you've done so many.
I'm not going to lie. It's my favorite Kane look. And I love that they just messed it up so many times with all the kills and everything. It could have been so much better. So as a
kid, you mean part seven? Part seven's kills were messed up.
Part seven's kills were messed up. If you ever see the behind the scenes, there's so much
heavily
more.
Edited.
Yeah, like the couple in the van having sex. He like accordions his head and brains come out. And yeah. Dr. Kaiser, when he's killed, his guts come out of the weed eater. All that was taken out. So that's, to me, it like lacked a little. Part four is my favorite. Part four with Ted.
So White. Well, it's very
seven's right there.
Yeah.
That whole thing is part seven right there.
Also, you act in these films, but do you prefer being in front of the camera or behind it?
Hold on, I think Kevin had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, back to the kills in part seven, that wasn't Beekler's fault. I think John, you know, rest his soul, and hope he's in resting in power and slasher films up in heaven. I think he was so willing to take the genre to the next level of gore, and they just wouldn't let him do that. So,
I mean, I was still scared as an 11-year-old, but I mean, in today's standards, I was 11.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I think actually Tim's question is good for both of you, both Kevin and Peter, because you both, I mean, Peter, I know you have, you produced these films and now wrote and direct, but also acted them. Kevin, you've primarily been an actor, but we all know that you co-created, co-wrote, served as an executive producer on the daytime Emmy award-winning series After Forever. So you have been behind the camera too. Do you both prefer being in front of the camera or behind?
You know, I just want to do great work. I want to be involved in great projects. And sometimes great projects don't necessarily... don't fall into a category of, well, this content is more moving or this content is more scary. Sometimes it's a reunion. Sometimes it's, I'm going to get to work with great people. I'm going to work with friends. But I think I'm always an actor first, but I'm a better producer. So when I'm creating from that spot and that hat, so to speak, I'm a really great actor. Oh, so wow. I kind of lead with producer and then the acting falls into place. But I got to meet Peter and play, and we had that one day of work was just like, boom, 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 fun.
Yeah. Well, Peter, yeah, since you have acted in a lot of your productions, which do you prefer?
Oh, man. You know what? I think the question will be better answered after I have the premiere, because I'm keep being told by my DP and all the other directors that once you have your premiere, it's kind of like your baby being born. You know what I'm saying? So then you really like sit back and can take it in and see the crowd reaction, see the fan reaction there. So I guess my answer might change a little by that point, but I love acting. I think I'm better at directing and producing and marketing and putting people together. It's just, it's so tough with me because I'm such a perfectionist that I'm really like an asshole to work for.
I was just going to say, you are not an asshole. You were so accommodating and so fun. And, you know, we gave you ideas and you're like, oh yeah, let's play with that. And, you know, it's,
But the people I put, like my DP and the editor and the sound people and all that, I'm like a perfectionist and I'm on them all the time. I'm like, I told you to get it done. They're like, it's 3 a.m. Wake up. get it done. And then I'm like, I'm on scene 117-710 tenths of a second, remove the 7 tenths to 5 tenths. And they're like, no one's going to know. I know.
Yeah.
It's just like that kind of thing.
Kind of like me. I feel like I was thinking this is me with the podcast. I'd be like, we haven't put this in our spreadsheet of guests perfectly with a period. I'm very much a perfectionist. Tim's like, whatevs.
No, I'm a little, I'm whatever.
No, I get that. I'm totally the type A, like annoying perfectionist type too. But I feel like in some ways you have to be to get
it. I don't think it's annoying. I think it's striving for excellence. And whether it's a fourth of a fraction of a second, or whether it's a scene that you've worked your ass off on, you go, that's no good, I'm deleting it. It's about striving for the highest quality of creativity that one can do. Peter's like that. I know Lars like that. I definitely know Terry is like that. And I think it comes back to, I just want to create. You just want to create, Peter. And it's, I thought you were a great director and a creator. So
look at this love.
I was going to ask Kevin, like, how did this come about? Like, did Peter reach out to you or
go ahead,
like,
Peter.
How did this all come about?
Yeah, actually, or maybe even Peter, if you can take us back to how the whole idea came about for Roseblood, like how the project started and how you reached out to Lar and Terry and Kevin. Just take us through the whole story. We want to hear.
All right, cool. So Vengeance 2, we made Vengeance 1. So Vengeance 2 was coming out and I'm a producer on that. I was actually supposed to be in it acting wise. And then they were going to shoot a week, be down a week and then shoot a week again. So I was like, you know what? In that week down, I called my buddy Riley, you know, Riley, Kevin, and we were on his podcast. And I was like, hey, what if we do like a 20-minute little short where we show what happens to Tina, like after, because I only thought we could make a fake Tina, you know, after part 7 or what happens. Everyone's like, yeah, good idea. And I'm like, well, who's going to direct it? And they're like, you direct it. I'm like, what? I'm like, I never even went to school or nothing for that. I literally don't know how to turn on these cameras. They're so expensive. I don't even know what's going on. I'm scared to touch them. So they're like, you can do it because you can get people together to do it. So long story short, that like rolled into something. I never wrote the movie. I just wrote Lars' part. I had a guy named John Wood who's friends with Lar, and he said, why don't you show it to her? So I showed it to her figuring nothing. She's like, this is awesome. She's like, this is exactly what I've been waiting for 30 something years. I'm like, what? So she calls me and then we go over it all. And then she's like, well, I want to see the rest of the script. I didn't have the rest of the script. So it literally in my underwear in this seat, I just wrote for 3 days in a row, the whole script, sent it to her. She loved it. You know, and then I'm like, what are the odds of even getting, you know, Kevin or Terry? She's like, oh, this is, I'll get him. And then she called, I think Terry first, Kaiser, got him, and then I called him, did my little spiel, and then I talked to Kevin, and literally from zero, nothing, air, to within a couple days, we had an entire movie going. It was amazing.
Wow, that's how it happens.
And it was in the middle of the pandemic.
Yes.
I am just shocked, like shocked in a, like, it's so exciting, like that you're, that's like a fan's dream.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? You write, you love the film, you write like what would be in your mind, like a sequel. And then the people love it so much that they want to be attached. Like, well, and then like Tim was saying, Kevin, when you first heard from, I guess it was Lar, like, what were your thoughts? Did you have reservations about returning, or were you just like, if she's in, I'm in?
No, I mean, I didn't have any reservations. I was told about the project. She had already talked with Peter and said he's a really great guy and he did this other couple of films and they're really great, you know, examples of what he can do and the work is good. And I called Peter and he said, well, I can't give it away right here, but he explained what my participation would be. And I said, great, let's do it. So you know, don't blink, but I'm there, and I got to have a reunion with Terry and Lar and work with Peter and everybody else. And the facility that they created up in Seattle, was really great, really professional, and really, you know, for an independent adjacent studio, it was all on this, blanking on his name now.
Sean.
Sean's property. Just amazing. Amazing.
That is so cool. So then Peter, in your own, oh, sorry, go.
Oh, just to elaborate on that, because Sean's the executive producer.
Yes.
When I was talking about doing this, we had an old shack that we had for Vengeance, but it was small. Kevin, did you ever see it when you
were
there?
I did.
Yeah. So I'm like, we're going to shoot in there. He's like, well, I'll just build an entire building. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I'll build a 40-foot high building by 50 feet by whatever, $250,000, $350,000. I'll build it in a month. He's a builder. And I was like, are you joking? And he's like, no. And Kevin saw it. It was absolutely amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he just did that. And on his own property too.
That's so impressive.
Talk about and also how flattering, that's many people believe so much in your material that look, not only you're willing to be in the film, but I'm just going to build an entire
me build a house.
That is so cool. So Peter, in your own words, because I don't want to, obviously I've watched the trailers and seen the write up on the plot, but I want you, for our listeners, to describe, if you had to describe the plot of Rosebud for people who may be familiar with part 7, but say they don't know anything about the fan film, how would you describe the plot of your film?
You guys got great questions, man. You lead in with these great questions that allow me to expand. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Well, yeah, we're very excited about this, and we want to promote it. And we're thinking, what would listeners want to hear? And my first thought is, okay, how are they bringing Tina back, and what's happening? So you know it obviously best. So tell
us. Let me ask you a question. Have you guys seen both trailers?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, I could explain the plot from what I've gotten from the write-ups, but I would rather have you do it.
All right. Well, I'll say it and then you tell me where you were at.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically it takes place 13 months after the end of 7. There's two timelines. There's 2021, which is Kevin, Lar, and Terry now. And then there's 1989. So the movie was made May 13th, 1988. 13 months later is June 13th, 1989. And every single calendar on the wall will show that, the days. So I had that exact. And it takes place of what Tina got into. In my mind, if all that happened, right, somebody would catch on. Dr. Cruz has notes on her, that her ability, her powers. All of a sudden, a building blew up. People are dead everywhere. They find a mask. To me, it'd be a military thing. They'd be like, well, we can militarize her and make her a weapon, kind of like Firestarter.
I love that.
So, yeah, and where would she be? In an asylum, because she's kind of messed up. And so to me, that's where the story always would have went. She never just would have went home. You know what I'm saying? So to me, that's where it takes place. So there's two different timelines. There's the Lar now, and there's what happens at that point. And then there's Rose. So part 7 was the new blood. Rose is a new Tina who's stronger than Tina, Roseblood. So, and it's all about their dichotomy and their relationship and how the military, me, the generals, the bad guy, trying to weaponize them. They're building a relationship and everything, how it takes place. So I think it really, if you really are a part 7 fan, kind of fills in all those holes that you always wanted.
Did because when I was watching the trailers, I did notice, because you have cast someone to play the young Tina right after part 7 and Lar. So is it kind of an equal amount for both timelines, or do we have more with the young or more with Lar? How did you approach that?
More with Tina. With young Tina, sorry.
With more the young Tina.
Just because that story after is more, sets up her timeline. Get it?
And then it looks like it, I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, because when I watched the trailer, at least the second one, it looks like you also brought back a character from Jason Goes to Hell, Creighton Duke. Okay, good. I'm right.
I thought I saw him too.
And so my question is, what made you decide to add him to the story and combine characters from films, and why him specifically?
Great. Dude, you guys are good. You guys are good. I was going to leave it out because I didn't know if you noticed everything.
So. Aren't they good?
No, yeah. I mean, are you kidding? We know the series. I never want to infer that I know. And I was like, maybe he just really looks like him. But I was like, no, he's called the Duke. There's got to be the same character.
So did you also notice where the facility is, what it's called and where it is?
It's the Crystal Lake something facility?
Research facility. That's from Jason X.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
So in Jason X, there was a research facility that was owned by mental people and the army that was on the lake where Camp Crystal Lake is. So to me, it's like, wow, this is so perfect. Because how would you explain him getting from a lake to somewhere else? So if you put it in part 10 world, it's right there. It's on the lake. And then part 9, the Duke, to me, was always the, I hate 9, but the Duke was the coolest character ever. And like, you never really got like a backstory on him. So to me, he's a doctor. And I always envisioned him as being American Indian. So that's kind of the, and that portrays out, and that lays out in the movie. So I wanted to insert him there. Because remember in part 9, when Jason grabs him and he kills him, he goes, "Remember me?" And he hits him with the handcuffs. Mm-hmm. I explain the whole backstory of how that happens.
Wow.
And I have a question. So Dr. Cruz, since he died in part 7, is he a ghost in your film?
Yeah, or... Terry Kaiser. That was the first thing. We saw the trailer.
Oh, is that a twist?
Will you tell us, or we're not allowed to know because that's a spoiler?
I can't tell you, but if you watch the beginning of the trailer too, there's a big hint right there.
Okay, well,
because I initially thought, I was like, okay, he really died. Like, it wasn't even just a maybe death. Like, he got a pretty bad, brutal death.
People survive.
So I'm like, is he an apparition or something? And Kevin, I mean, what was it like working? Oh, yes, Kevin.
I just want to say, in this genre,
yeah, you're never dead.
You're never dead.
I mean,
look at Jason. Never. Dead.
That's true. And I think Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode has died like 3 to 4 times in different movies. So like she, yeah. Well, but I mean, Kevin, what was it like working with Lar Park and Terry? Again, I know you know, have an appearance in the film, but like you got to work. What was it like revisiting a character from 33 years ago?
Well, Nick dons his jean jacket once again.
Yes. Short shorts.
No shorts. It was too cold in Seattle. And I had a great time. I mean, Terry is one of my favorite actors in my history of, you know, the career and what I've seen. And I remember him kind of giving us support back, was it 33 years ago now? I don't even know how many years ago it was.
34.
Is it? Oh, wow. And Laura and I have had such an evolved relationship. You know, there's all those rumors. We didn't really get along when we were filming part 7, but that was just coming from two different points of view on how to take the work on. And she had so much on her mind, literally. But she and I have become really great friends, you know, through the years. She was so taken by my series After Forever that when she saw it and we were at a convention together, she sat me down. She goes, "Okay, tell me everything about this, and what can I do to help support it?" I said, "You know, if you can be a voter, you know, in the Emmys, consider our." But she came to the Emmys. She came to the 2019 Emmy Awards, and she was there when we won. And she was just, you know, so supportive and delightful. So I had a great time. I thought this. I hate to say it, Peter. This wasn't work. This was play. You know, this was a lot of fun, and I love that it all worked out that we were all there on the same day for all of our scenes.
As fans of this series, to hear that is incredible. Like to hear that people got along and not just got along, but like have formed relationships.
Yeah, what a full circle moment.
Yeah, and that it goes for this long is really, really cool. And just like to continue that these people continue to embrace the parts that we loved in. Because, you know, Kevin and most of the actors from these series have gone on to do tons of other things. But we as horror fans love you for these movies that maybe they weren't the biggest blip on your radar. But for us, it's like everything. You know?
I mean, like, since you're in those films, we will follow your career no matter where you go. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Peter, another, since you were bringing so many people back, I was wondering, was there ever talked or was there ever a thought about like maybe bringing Tina's mom back, Susan Blue, or any other characters that you considered bringing back other than the Duke?
Good question. But first of all, Kevin, I want you to see this. This is the Roseblood script that you have to sign with Terry and Lar. Which is all
beautiful. Wow. It's for the listeners, it is all in red. It looks like it's
the pages are in red. Yeah, the pages are in red.
Rivets on it.
Wow. That's
yeah, rivets. Like back into the day where you use rivets.
Yeah, I think it's cool, right?
I think it's great. That's wonderful.
So yeah, I didn't want to bring the mother back. The mother's dead.
Right? Sue Blue is dead. She's actually, Sue Blue is alive and well. She lives in Palm Springs. She's amazing.
Yeah. Right after Kevin's like, you're never really dead. I like it, Peter.
In my world. So I wanted to bring back people that were alive. And the Dr. Cruise will work itself out once you watch the movie. So one person I did want, I'm actually friends with Kane Hodder. So I just hung out with him 2 weeks ago. He was at a convention and he always pulls me out of line by my neck and throws me with him and we hang out and then we drink. he usually calls me Petey. I don't know if you've seen that, Kevin, right? Yeah. Like if anybody else calls me Petey, I'll pretty much break your face. But he calls me Petey and is acceptable. So I tried to get him so many times. It's just not something he does. He doesn't really do the fan film thing, which fine with me, you know, but I mean, detailed videos to him and everything about trying to get him in the suit we got is like $10,000. It's made by a guy from Brazil. It's the exact same one. Well, to it, you know, almost as the part seven. You guys saw it in the trailer too when he steps out of the water and sits up. He looks phenomenal. The only other person I wanted was Kane, obviously, because that would be absolutely amazing.
Talk about a reunion. But we did see on your Facebook page that Kane did a little video.
Shouted us out. You see that, Kevin? Cool.
I just watched his documentary last night. It's Kane's documentary on Shudder. Yeah, it's like, it's so sad. He was so bullied as a child. So there's not to bring it down. I'm just saying.
Wait a minute. Wait. Kane did a documentary?
Yeah, it's on Shudder right now. It's really good.
And it's called Working with Kevin Spiritus. Yes. My life story. <I'm just kidding.
laughs> Working with 4-time Emmy Award winner Kevin Spiritus. Let's make it right, Kane. No. Okay. It's on Shudder. Okay, great. Shout out to Kane. I think Kane does an amazing amount of work around the country. He lectures on, all these places and, you know, being a burn victim. And he gives these kids hope. And it's he's a hero.
And part seven was his first entry in the series. So talk about.
I have a great story about that. Do you remember when I got the job of Friday the 13th, part seven was I was originally about a week and a half or 2 weeks before I had the audition. I saw Kane running through a studio at NBC Studios. He was the stunt coordinator for Santa Barbara, the soap opera. And I was testing for a new role. And he's coming down the hall. I go, hey, dude, I didn't remember his name. I said, weren't you that stunt guy who worked on Hills Have Eyes Part 2 with Wes Craven? And didn't you do that fire thing? He goes, oh, yeah, I remember you, blah, 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 blah. That was the first movie I'd ever done. And he and I just sort of spoke for a moment. I said, that was the coolest stunt because they drag him through this ring of fire. And then he goes, I just got Jason in the new Friday the 13th part 7. Am I on? Yeah. Oh, okay. And he goes, I'm going to be Jason. Well, they cut the role in Santa Barbara. I didn't get the role, but I find myself auditioning for Birthday Bash.
Yep. 2 weeks later. And that's so weird. It's such weird connections. And then you guys are in it. And then now 4 years later, we're now talking about it with the people from it. It's amazing. I do have to ask you, Kevin, because we both Tim and I are gay and we are very interested in. Oh, my God. wait. Peter's like, get me.
Welcome to the club.
I know. Kevin also. But we're all out gay men and Peter, not Peter. But, you know.
But he's gay friendly. And that's the love. That's what we love about him.
Peter is an A in the LGBTQA ally.
I never knew that. Is that a real thing?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
You were an A. Well, okay. So Kevin, going back to Friday, you know, as years have gone by since Friday the 13th Part 7 and a lot more actors have felt more comfortable coming out, Part 7 was nicknamed apparently Fry-Gay because there were so many openly gay cast members. And I've just got to ask, what in 1988, because there were, I think, 4 male cast members and then 1 female who were out. Were they out then? And what was that like on set?
Well, let's go back in time for a second. There's a lot of gay fans who were, you know, encouraging that. I know there are some people on that particular chapter of Friday that are gay. I don't know if they're out publicly. I don't know. So I can't really talk about who they may or may not be. But for me and my journey, it was a different time back then. No one, I was categorized as a leading man and I was categorized as you know, you don't talk about your sexuality. You just act first, you know, it wasn't until, I mean, we didn't have Will and Grace. We didn't have Modern Family. We didn't have all of these look at where Billy Porter has been able to step out into the world now and really help not just the gay world, but the trans community. And, you know, he's a buddy of mine and I'm so inspired by him. But for me, I was just, I wasn't ready to publicly come out and really talk about it until there was an opportunity where I was looking to do content. And this was after Forever, which I created with the late Michael Slade, my collaborator. And I just wanted to do great content and I wanted to do something that was personal to me. And I was going through, I was single at the time. I wanted to find love and I was a little over 50 years old. And I thought, there's got to be a story for a man like me who's not getting called to do other stories. And that's why we created it. And I felt very good about presenting that because it was honest, it was personal, and it was very well received. And it's not even just a gay story. It's gay thematic and storytelling, but it's about love and loss and moving on. And everybody experiences loss.
Yeah, no, and we
even Jason Voorhees will experience loss.
I can speak to that. After Forever is incredibly moving. Yeah. It's a great, great series. And to tell you the truth, Kevin, I know obviously it was a different time back then, but for gay horror fans like us today, like being able to look back at these movies and know that even though some of these actors may not have been out or may not have been playing gay characters, just knowing they were part of these films is so inspiring and just uplifting. Yes. For us, just to see representation. So that's why, you know, whatever nicknames, whoever was out, doesn't even matter. Just to know that there's representation. Yeah. In these films is so, it's so moving for people like us through the
years. Yeah. And I support that. And again, I wasn't ready, you know, when a person comes out, I'm just saying this for the world. When a person comes out, that means their entire world of people in their life, their parents are then going to come out. Their brothers and sisters and relatives, they are all going to have to come out because the knowledge will be not. Sometimes someone is not ready to come out because they know what it will do to their parents or their parents aren't accepting or all that other craziness. So, you know, I came from a pretty good family and I had my clashing of what that meant to my family and what it meant to me and where it still stands in certain levels. But, my family is very proud of me and very supportive of me now, and I'm supportive of myself, and that's what I think really is the main key. So whoever talks about it outside of the person who they are talking about must be respectful and must absolutely respect the time and place when it's time to come out.
Totally, totally. It's a very personal decision. And well, we are very thankful for people. Yes. like, you know, coming out and being, but anyway, taking away from
shifting gears.
I know you talked about it.
No, but it's nice.
So after part 7 wrapped, Kevin, you wrote a script as well for part 8. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, can you tell us what it was about, what that was about? Peter, do you?
Well, I still have to talk to Peter about it because I want Peter to do it. I want Peter to make it. I think everybody in those series, whether it was part 5 or part 3, you know, once we saw that part 7, they were going to do a part 8, you know, why not, you know, toss your hat in the ring? I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and my dad is a demolition contractor. And it had something to do with, you know, there was a lot of cranes involved and stuff, but as a backdrop. But it had to do with Jason being resurrected. It was a dream that Tina was not really telekinetic, but boyfriend and girlfriend with Nick and Tina. And it was their venturing out into an area where Jason gets resurrected due to I don't want to say it because someone's going to want to take it. He gets resurrected by a very, very interesting underhanded business deal. And that's where he grows life again, and you know, anyway. But it's and then we get killed.
That's so far. I just didn't know because I remember you kind of touched on it when we first spoke with you, but I was like, but we never actually got to hear what it was about. I didn't know.
I could tell you what it's about, but I mean, they passed on it. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
And then Paramount did part 8,
Well, but there is new life ahead, as we've realized, for all of these series, for all these installments. So you never know. I mean, what isn't it great? That's why we were so excited to talk to you, Peter, and so excited to see this film. You are bringing new life into installments that we love, that we thought we would never get to see more of. Like, you know, you see part seven and then it's part eight and everything's forgotten about. And you're like, wait, what happened to those characters? So it's, you know.
Well, that was just the way that Paramount, they were like, we're not going to make anyone like, we can't get everyone twice. Like, I don't know why they did that, but I mean.
Yeah.
They got Jamie Lee Curtis 150 times, you know, not them, but.
Well, exactly. I mean, so Peter, we are going to be releasing this interview on, we release our episodes on Sundays, and we're going to be releasing this on Sunday, November 28th, which I read, I think, is the same day as the premiere screening for Roseblood in Connecticut. Can you tell us about that? And then when will it be released for the general public?
So Kevin and Terry and Lar will be at the premiere. So it's a little bit more than a premiere. It's as soon as we get done, I got to go drive and see a guy. It's a premiere and a convention, but it's a premiere convention, like a red carpet affair. My buddy owns a wedding event center, very nice place. Funny, Kevin knew where it was because he was going around that area for a while. It was called the Woodwinds, and it's going to be just everything there. So we're going to have a DJ. You're going to have wedding style food. You're going to have drink. You're going to have cosplayers there. You're going to have photo booths. So all of our outfits, I'm boxing them now, from the Duke to the General to the red streak in Rose's hair to the jackets to everything will be there. So you can take free professional photos with a professional photographer in all of our outfits. We have stuff for kids there. We have a panel with all of us on there to be interviewed. We have two different live podcasts going on. And this entire event will be on the behind the scenes on the Blu-ray also. So that's what's going on.
Wow.
Tim and Matt, you should come.
I was just going to say, truthfully, if it were closer and we didn't have real jobs, unfortunately, this isn't
I get paid for this.
If I would love to come honestly, Peter, when I looked up the event, the first thing I looked was where it was. And I was like, oh, shit, Connecticut, because we would be there.
Yeah, Peter, course. I am so impressed with everything you're doing. It's so impressive.
It really is.
Also, you were asking, sorry, I didn't answer the other question. It goes live. When you do a fan film, you have to release it live, free on social media. It's part of the rules. So it'll be on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern on my Peter Anthony Productions YouTube channel, 8 p.m. Monday the next day. So Kevin, Cody Newton, the director of photography, and Ryan Race, the other guy who was holding the camera for the second unit, they're going to be at the premiere, and then they're coming to stay at my house, and we're going to release it live that night and just sit back and drink and then watch everyone with the comments and hopefully like it. So it'll be cool.
That's so cool.
And Kevin, you do know that as soon as this is released, like, you are going to get an influx of just like messages. Everything's going to be Friday the 13th. You know what I mean? Like,
oh gosh.
Are you guys telling me that I'm going to get like, am I going to get an influx of gay like invites in my thing?
I mean, I don't know, Peter. You might.
Well, no. Here's the thing. In all honesty, Peter, like, there is a very niche like gay horror loving audience. I mean, obviously, there's all horror lovers can be any sexuality, but like, I've realized through the years.
Yeah, I mean, like, reason, when we go to screenings, it's like a lot of gay men.
40% gay men. I don't have a degree in order to answer why gay men are attracted to horror so much, but you will definitely get tons of fans that are going to be really interested in this because of the content, because of the people.
I think it's because of the soap opera aspect of it. It's a continuation. And I also wanted to ask you, Kevin, which do you get recognized for more, Days of Our Lives or Friday 13th Part 7?
It's a toss-up, actually. It's a toss-up. I just did a benefit in the desert where I was driving back and I was calling Matt, trying to figure out times and everything. But I sang at this big event and I'm walking through the after party and this kid comes up to me and he goes, I'm going to be a real fanboy now. But I went, Days of Our Lives, I know. And he goes, no, Friday the 13th, Part 7. He was like, it was so funny because no one else in that, you know, was a lot of Palm Springs older money, but he's like, I came to see you, Friday.
Aww, that's awesome. And I guess we wanted to ask for both of you, have you attended horror conventions, whether, you know, as the guest or as the fan, Peter, or as the, you know, producer or something? Have you guys, and what do you get asked the most if you're getting questions? Have you both attended horror conventions?
Yes. As a guest.
Just one for me so far. Probably going to be a little bit more after this, but just one so far. But everyone's just a huge fan. Like, it's weird. There's a dichotomy of the fact that a fan like me, right, big fan, went out and made a movie, I think really resonates with fans even more than like the bigger films on some levels with some fans, because they're like, wow, I can do that. Like, and the fact that the studios aren't making any movies anymore for Friday the 13th, been since 2009, they kind of like are reinvigorized by it. So they're like big fanboys of the fact that someone like us, a fan, just went and made it. So that's what I get, like the thank you for giving us something that we need.
Awesome.
So impressive.
And Kevin, how about you? Have you been there, and what do you get asked most often?
You know, I get asked what it was like to work with Kane Hodder and Laura, because, you know, but the fans are there to see Jason, really, of this particular franchise. Jason's the king, and he, you know, and there's these extraordinary young goth boys or goth girls, or some of the, you know, when they've got Jason tattooed on their body, they are like, was he scary to work with? Yes, he was, you know, because, you know, actually, Kane, I have to say, Kane had a lot going on that shoot. He was the star. He was the stunt coordinator, and he oversaw every single thing that was going on there for safety purposes. And he could only see through one eye because the lens he was wearing in the costume was so clouded over. He really had like one eye to like kind of look and purvey things through. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit. So he was scary, but not scary in a bad way.
Yeah. No, he's an icon. I mean, you cannot think of Friday the 13th without thinking of Kane Hodder. You just can't. Yeah. He's played Jason the most, and it's just incredible. But so as we're getting to our final question, which we ask every single person at the end, and we've gotten some crazy answers, some very tame answers, but we want to ask both of you this, and we'll give you a second to think if you'd like. But what is one thing that you can tell us about your experience working on, I guess, for Kevin, Friday the 30th Part 7, for Peter, working on Roseblood, that you've never told any other interviewer, publication, podcaster, anything? It can be one little juicy piece of gossip.
Well, he already told us. He said he wrote the script in his underwear.
Yes, you did tell us that. But if you have another one, just something that you have never told anyone else, Kevin, for you two, specifically the Friday the 30th Part 7, and Peter, that you've never told anyone else, but it can be anything.
Kevin's got a lot more experience. So, Kevin, you go first while I think about mine, if that's okay with you.
You know, I remember it was the Winter Olympics that was going on. And, you know, I grew up as a gymnast, and I did figure skating for a while. And two things I remember. I remember that I was there in, where were we? The panhandle of Alabama. I can't remember where we shot this thing.
Alabama.
And we were, my mom and dad were dealing with the task of having to put our family dog down. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a very sad thing for me. And I remember, and then on the flip side of that, I remember I was on a special diet at that time. I was really trying to eat very healthy, and I wasn't doing dairy, and I wasn't doing any, you know, whatever. I was on a very strict diet. And one day we got to location, and they didn't bring my packet of food that I was supplying them with every day or whatever. And we also didn't get any real food until about 3 hours. We had a very big meal penalty that day, and they brought pizzas. I was so hungry that I went and I took a bite of pizza and walked behind one of the trailers and just heaved. It was, my system was so not used to that anymore. I mean, it just, so there you go. Heaved on the set of Friday the 13th.
Well, you look great. I mean, yeah. Like, that diet was working.
It paid
still,
off.
Still working. I mean, I couldn't resist pizza ever.
No, I'll eat it anyway.
Oh, I don't resist it now either.
Good. That's,
as a matter of fact, I think we had some in Seattle.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay, how about you, Peter?
I don't have anything juicy, but I have some stuff that most people don't know. So the costume that we ordered from Brazil, So the way I was going to shoot the movie was that Jason wasn't going to have his mask on because his mask broke in seven. And then he was going to come back and do whatever he had to do and then eventually find his mask. So three quarters of the movie, he would have no mask and then wear a mask. And that's why I paid so much for the face and everything. Well, the guy waited and waited and waited and waited. Then he next day aired it from Brazil the day before. From Brazil. I don't even know what that cost. And it came. And every time something comes from Brazil, man, they're thieves over there. They ripped the box open. This is the second time and took the hood off. They took the whole hood piece off, which is like the most important. We could have done an arm or we could have done something else. So we were like, what the? So I completely changed the movie to where he has to get the mask in a completely different way. And he has the mask on 90% of the film instead of the reverse. And we did that the day before.
Wow. I think that's pretty juicy.
Yeah. I was so pissed and scared. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, and I was so, we called like UPS, we called like Brazil, we called everywhere trying to find out. No one was going to tell you what happened to it. But yeah.
Hey, Brazil, what happened?
Where's the mask? Yeah, yeah.
I had a Jason mask. What'd you do?
Yeah. So, I was so upset. Yeah. I was so upset. But it actually is one of those Jaws moments. It works out better because then when you do see it, it's like you've been waiting for it the whole time.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that is a great one. And you
too. No one knows that.
These are great. That's why we asked. So we have gotten some crazy answers and some very tame answers. Yeah. Some really crazy.
There's no
answers.
Wrong answer.
There's no wrong answer.
Back to the Kevin thing. Kevin, I used to bodybuild and I used to eat really, really clean, especially when I was dieting towards the end. I mean, insane clean.
Yeah.
And once the show was over, when you were done, I would just, like you said, eat pizza or ice cream and you would throw it up.
Yeah.
Because your body sees it as like a toxin. It's not even used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had been on this really health kick for probably about 4 weeks prior to filming. And then during the first, I think we had like a 12-week shoot. I can't remember. It was a 3-month shoot or something. And all while I was here in LA, it was easy for me to accommodate the diet. But then once we went over to Alabama, I had to like get a little fridge for my room and go to health food stores in Alabama, which were few and far between. And,
I'm sure.
And then that night that I wasn't planning for it. Neither was my stomach.
Kev, here you go, Kev. This is all you know is the fat old me, but there you go.
Dude.
Wow. We are looking at an incredibly jacked picture of Peter Anthony, everyone.
And now good job.
There's our ally, Peter Ally Anthony.
The A in Anthony stands for ally.
And for those fans who are not watching this and they're listening to it, obviously, he ain't bad to look at, Mr.
No, please.
Good
job. Easy on the eyes.
I feel like this has been so much fun for us. Seriously. Thank you, Kevin, for connecting us to Peter. Thank you, Peter, for doing this with us. I love this. We're going to take, by the way, for listeners, actually explain what you told us about what we're going to take a picture of to show people.
Can't explain it too much.
Oh,
not supposed to have it. But basically, I have a rare copy of the mother's head from Friday the 13th Part 2 because, well, no one's the mold someone got a hold of.
That
You know, so it's not that it's illegal. It just never was a transaction. And once that person got the mold, they didn't steal it. They bought it. But they got the mold. They did it on their own. So who knows how legal it is, illegal it is. But there's no names. No one knows who it is. But so that's one of the original 12 of the mother's head sitting there.
This is amazing. Awesome. We're going to take a screenshot right now so people can see because this is for really, really cool. Yeah. Okay.
You inspire me to go work out.
I'll give you a countdown.
Needs a haircut.
She's gorgeous.
So do you, Peter.
Yay!
Awesome. This has been so much fun. We are so excited to see the film. We're so excited that you've gotten all these characters we love back together. We're excited to see the new characters in it. And so
congratulations on getting this movie done. Wow.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And thank you, Kevin, for returning to the franchise that we absolutely love you. And so hopefully there is more to come with maybe we'll see you in another one also, Kevin. Who knows?
One never knows. Do one.
You don't.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, both of you. Really, thanks for taking time with us.
And Peter, I'll see you in 2 weeks in person. And any of you wonderful people out there who listen to this, please support the franchise and watch this movie. It's gonna be great.
Yes, we can't wait. Okay, take care. Talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall, who also hosts a great true crime podcast, Crime of Your Life.
Please check out our website, happyhorrortime.com, where you can stream all of our episodes and see all our pretty little episode images. You can also follow our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
We love hearing from our listeners, so if you want to contact us about one of our recent episodes, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com.
If you'd like to support this podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime. Patrons get access to our growing library of bonus episodes where we discuss older horror films, look back at popular franchises, and all kinds of other fun horror stuff.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you have a happy horror time.